Hello, everyone. Welcome to the JS Online and Packers News podcasts. I am one of your hosts, Tom Silverstein. I'm here with my partner in crime, Jim Osarski. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
It's great. It's a great day to be covering a coaching search because it's over. We have the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, Mr. Matt LaFleur. Before we get started, Jim, I'm just going to remind everybody that we're brought to you by Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino, and the World Series of Poker Circuit comes to Pottawatomie January 31st through February 11th. Play for a guaranteed prize pool of $750,000. More at paysbig.com/WSOP. All right, Jim, I don't know if there's any news this week. Maybe we could just cut this one short.
Yeah, right?
Well, so Matt LaFleur, what would you have bet? Where would he have been on your list of odds for becoming the next Packers head coach?
If I was being honest with myself and our listeners, which of course I always am, maybe third behind McDaniels and Adam Gase of the 10 they interviewed. You know, I guess I would have put him ahead of Todd Monken just because of the reasons he was hired. But yeah, I would have definitely had him third.
Okay. What did you think about some of the other guys? So apparently Mark Murphy didn't think very highly about the
right.
other guys because he pretty much said LaFleur was way better than those guys. Could they have gone with McDaniels? I guess he's, to me, was the most qualified of anybody to handle this job.
Yeah, of course. I you know, being a former head coach, and obviously we know the track record, I guess I never had a feel that there was a front runner, and maybe, you know, that Mark Murphy obviously felt that way too.
Mm-hmm.
Although I still am really curious, Tom, if Pat Fitzgerald would have agreed to sit down, like what would have happened there?
Me too.
Because if they thought Matt LaFleur won them over in an interview, then I can almost guarantee Pat Fitzgerald would have blown them away.
Oh, they would have just put the checkbook over there and said, here, you know, put in the numbers you want.
Right. So that obviously that didn't happen. The nine, I mean, I think Matt LaFleur's personality, from what I know and what I've read, is different than all of the other candidates.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably more closer to Jim Caldwell in the sense of he seemed more measured, not as boisterous publicly. I mean, he's supposedly has a fiery way of coaching, but in terms of his presentation.
Yeah.
Very calm and...
Yeah. He doesn't come with the... probably the... Oh, I don't know. Intensity maybe is the word. You know, Adam Gase is kind of a high-strung guy, but... Well, not high-strung, but very direct.
Yeah.
Very... A little bit caustic. You know, I'm sure Fangio comes away that way. I mean, he's a football coach's football coach, you know. They chose what I would consider is like a new age football coach.
Yeah.
A guy who's been in this system. Do you think they were trying to find Sean McVay? Or were they just trying to find a guy that could make Aaron Rodgers great again?
I guess I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and go with the latter, just because Brian Flores and Chuck Pagano were the only two candidates they talked to with any defensive background.
Right.
So, yeah, I think if Josh McDaniels had won them over or stood out, to use Mark Murphy's words, the way it sounds, they'd be still waiting for him.
Yeah.
Or they would have hired Adam Gase if that was. So I do think they were just looking for, someone to get the offense right. And then, you know, Mark Murphy, there's a lot to unpack from the many words he said.
Oh, my gosh.
And one of them was, you know, how the the players felt there was a lack of accountability and complacency. And, you know, so I think they were looking for, I don't want to call it, say, a disciplinarian, but someone who, you know, would shake things up or whatever that meant to the players, sort of do that. I think that's what they were looking for.
Yeah. And, you know, the part that surprises me about that is I don't feel like LaFleur is that guy, that hard-nosed disciplinarian. Now, I don't know. I've not seen him in action. I've heard from people that he's pretty laid back, that not a big yeller, screamer. You know, I think what has to happen is when guys are out of line, then he has to act. And that's when we'll know whether there's a problem. You know, or whether he can handle being a head coach. I do wonder if the Packers thought in strongly pushing Mike Pettine to be the defensive coordinator was compensation for that, knowing that Pettine, if you remember, McCarthy just, and the players too, gushed over that speech that Pettine gave. I think it was before the opener or at some point during the season, McCarthy gives coaches the ability to give the speech. And he gave it to Pettine, and it was really well received. I wonder if Pettine will be, you know, co-coach in a sense.
Yeah, it's I mean, it fits the model. I'm curious if McDaniels or any of the other candidates were hired, if Pettine would have stayed. Mm-hmm. Because everyone else other than Pete Carmichael Jr., I mean, Flores was defensive, and Todd Monken hadn't been head coaches, mm-hmm. whereas Pettine has been there, done it, and Matt LaFleur needs someone to rely on. I mean, we'll find out who his offensive coordinator is, but it sounds like he's not going for a Mike McCoy type or a guy who's also run a team.
No.
So if that's the case, you know, who's telling Matt LaFleur how to schedule, you know, 8 days worth of work and or, you know, training camp schedule? Or
right.
I mean, Mike Pettine's going to be, I would imagine, would be leaned on for that and to be that sort of guy. Yeah,
you know, and I'm sure, you know, LaFleur has experience with McVay for a whole year. He kind of grew up in the Mike Shanahan, you know, watching Mike Shanahan handle teams. Went to watch Kyle Shanahan run the Atlanta offense. So these guys take a lot of notes and follow what the head coaches are doing. I think to me, what's even more important than that is just presence. Do you have a presence in the locker room? And it may be that Pettine has a little bit more presence than him, and they have to sort of, you know, work that in some way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, when I talked to some people on the Tennessee staff, I mean, a player out in Los Angeles, Tom, they said Matt can connect with defensive players. Like he can, you know, there's not a divide, so to speak. He's able to relate. But again, it's different when you're a position coach or a coordinator.
Yeah.
To do that, it's another to, as you said, sort of lead the room. But clearly, you know, whatever he said in that interview, that didn't require a second one. I believe it was about 4 hours long.
Yeah.
You know, convince Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst that he could.
I will not till I retire, till the day I retire, not understand why they didn't do a second interview. You got to bring the guy to the place where you're going to hire him, and you got to at least find out how he's going to interact with, you know, people he's going to be working with and meet with people. I mean, we were joking about your interview, you know, here, and you have to meet with 7 different people. And you know, I don't care if you meet with HR in football, you know, for the Packers, but you should meet the equipment guy, and you should meet, you know, the nutritionist,
right,
and stuff like that. That part I'll never understand.
Yeah, that was really interesting, especially, you know, Mark Murphy sort of saying, hey, the three of us, meaning Gutekunst and Russ Ball, leave the interview Sunday. I really like him. And then, okay, you sleep on it, And then you wake up Monday, he's the guy. Like, there was no – I mean, I guess every question you have could be answered in 4 hours. That's a long time. But that's – no, you're right, especially for a candidate who had not been requested, wasn't going to be requested.
Right.
I mean, it was really the Packers just sort of in a race against themselves. And maybe, you know, after 7,000 miles in the air in 3 days, they were just, okay, this is it, and this is all we need.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's try to project what LaFleur, what the team will look like with LaFleur at the helm. You know, more than anything, we just need to look at offense, because that's what he's being brought in for, is offense. So I guess I would want to know how he – you know, one, how he's going to relate to Rodgers, and how much of Rodgers' mechanics are going to be changed in this offense.
That's a great question. You know, we asked him a little bit about his work with quarterbacks, and you know, he mentioned the first time he corrected Matt Ryan on the field was about footwork, and Matt Ryan didn't really appreciate that correction at the time. But he said, hey, that's what it is, and that's how I coach, and, you know, we made it work. So I think that'll be an adjustment for Aaron Rodgers, because I'm sure there will be things he does that Matt LaFleur, as a coach, it goes against his sensibilities.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Aaron Rodgers knew all the footwork in Mike McCarthy's offense. There was no, you know, he in fact, was dictating it, you know, using his footwork and dictating how routes were run, you know, with the timing and everything. Now, all of a sudden, I think there'll be a lot of changes in that regard.
Yeah, it'll
I'm
definitely
curious to ask LaFleur about that.
Yeah. And even the improvisation, you know, did that happen for Rodgers over time because he was growing weary of the offense, weary of, you know, this year especially, maybe receivers who weren't where he thought they should be. So he improvised more. That's not really a part of what the Shanahan offense is.
Mm-mm.
You know, if fans, you know, just look back at that Rams game from earlier in the year, the 49ers game, it's a straight drop. You know, maybe there's movement if need to, but it's actually not a whole lot of progression. I mean, guys are kind of schemed to be like one read, two. Now, Rodgers is obviously going to be well more advanced than Goff or, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo or any of those types of guys. But I don't know if he's going to want Rodgers to sort of sit and then start to run around.
Right. Like, is he going to forego the open guy because he wants something more? And from what I can tell, just looking at the Tennessee offense, that, you know, they do scheme guys to get open, and you hit the open guy, and sometimes it's only 8 yards down the field, you know,
yeah,
and you let him go and do something with it.
It is. I'm really fascinated to see. And maybe LaFleur, you know, adds some wrinkles because he has a quarterback and a receiver that is very unlike anything even in Los Angeles. Or, I mean, you have to go back to Atlanta with
right.
Julio Jones. But Julio Jones is not that precise of a route runner that Davante Adams is. He's just fantastic, but he's a different guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe there'll be different, you know, factors off of that. But you're right. It tends to be, you know, a one read or a quick two read offense. And you take your shots occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But guys are run off. Like, routes are almost you know, you'll see guys run off certain ways, but it's set up for, as you said, like the 9 yard catch, and maybe it turns into a big gain
right.
with a run
right.
after.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And then I do think that they're very committed to running the ball, and it's key because there's so much play action and action off of movement. You know, motion that, you know, they're going to have to run the ball a decent amount of time. And just watching Tennessee, they started out not running the ball at all and really didn't have much success till Derrick Henry sort of, if they discovered him like McCarthy discovered Aaron Jones too late. But it really changed everything they were doing. So, you know, that's another thing Rodgers is going to have to do is maybe not change plays as often as they do. I mean, I think they probably have purpose runs.
Yeah, you know? For sure. And look, even up front, you know, obviously the offensive line has to be addressed, but it's a different type of line that these guys use. I mean, in the sense of the movement, you know, where a lot, you mentioned the run and purpose runs. I mean, that's why you see the fake jet sweeps or the odd motions, because they want the left side of the line to block like it's this type of play. The right side blocks like it's this type mm-hmm. of play. And that's to help confuse what's going on in the front seven and create certain, you know, schemed running lanes. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like there's always a hole, but it's done very purposely where half the line is doing one thing to confuse linebackers to keep them there. I mean, that's why Todd Gurley, I think these past couple years, Tom, I mean, he would get 4 or 5 yards before first contact.
Yeah.
Because that's just how they – so I'm really – but you're right. I'm curious to see, you know, no, Aaron Jones has to run – you know, we need this.
Yeah. I also wonder during this offseason if this offense is going to be studied really closely by defensive coordinators, and then we'll see sort of the reaction. And, you know, someone along the line maybe it's – you know, the Cowboys figure out how to stop the Rams, and then everybody picks up on it, and now all of a sudden you got to figure out what's the counter, and does Matt LaFleur have a counter?
Right.
All of that.
That is a great question, and I think we're gonna find out as we record this podcast. Our divisional and championship games yet to be played. I think we'll learn a lot in this playoff with what Kansas City runs into. It's not the same offense, but they're similar principles. What LA runs into. Look, the Rams were shut down last year in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Mike Pettine, to me, gave the league a blueprint of what to do. And I thought Vic Fangio and his much more talented defense did that exact same thing.
Right.
And making, like, if you would have put the Bears' talent with Mike Pettine, I think that's what happens in LA back in midseason, my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the formula's out there. It's just, do you have the talent to actually do it for 60 minutes? And frankly, the league's designed for that to be really hard to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a great question. Does Matt LaFleur have a counter to what he's going to see from, you know, the Bears aren't going to all of a sudden be terrible on defense.
Right.
You would think Detroit gets a little better with Matt Patricia in year two.
Yes, yes.
We know Minnesota. I mean,
we know
just
the Vikings,
let's go to those six division games, Tom. I mean, you know, that alone is going to be important.
Yeah, and that's why, for all the talk we've heard from fans talking about they need edge rushers and passers, I think they just changed to needing a tackle, an offensive tackle or an offensive guard, you know, one who can come in and play right away.
Which is interesting, Tom, because you always want your needs to line up in one way or another, and this draft doesn't really give you play right away guards or tackles. I mean, in all reality, if the Packers stay where they are, they might get two starters on defense.
Yeah.
If the board falls.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe a year ago, while the trade down and Jair Alexander's great, maybe that would have been the time to find a tackle.
Yeah. Yeah. They got to find one, and it's not a huge year. Now, there's a little bit of free agency, but nobody lets really good tackles go. If you have a really good tackle, he's not going to free agency.
Right. I mean, look at Byron Bell. Those are the type of guys that usually hit. Oh, and if it's not, it's a Norwell or a Zeitler or a Nate Solder. And what's the common theme there, listeners? It's they are the highest paid
in NFL history.
Right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. I mean, Ricky Wagner made himself a fortune just by good timing becoming a free agent. So, Yeah, that's going to be really important. I wouldn't be surprised if they look for a big power running back. I mean, Jamal Williams could do that for them, but I wouldn't be surprised if they look for even a bigger bruiser than that just to complement Aaron Jones.
Yeah, you might see the H-back slash fullback return.
Mm-hmm. They use a lot of tight ends.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because at the end of the day, we'll get into this over the next few months and really dive into what this offense is, but it is West Coast rooted.
Mm-hmm.
It has evolved. But if you look at all of this, it's about having, you know, a really good athletic tight end or that can move into the backfield. I mean, Matt LaFleur mentioned Luke Stocker several times. Does anybody know that name?
Mm-mm.
Not really, mm-hmm. But he liked that guy to be able to put him in the backfield, be able to use him online as a tight end or split out. So,
yeah.
And he just happens to be a free agent this year.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, they really missed Delanie Walker. I think they had huge plans for him. And once he was gone and then Mariota got hurt, it's hard to tell what that – yeah, I don't think you can judge LaFleur on that season. It's just, I mean, they lost too many guys too quickly.
Yeah, and the thing I'll add to that, Tom, is, you know, Mark Murphy talked about the dealings that Matt LaFleur had to manage, I guess, injury-wise.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder, I mean, it's a real thing, but, I mean, if you're Brian Gutekunst, look, Aaron Rodgers hasn't finished the last two seasons. He's missed time.
Great point.
And I think there is something to be said for a coordinator, a play caller, to have to deal with, okay, the backup's in now.
Yeah.
How do we make this work? You know, was Matt LaFleur the one in charge of preparing the backup quarterbacks? I don't know that breakdown in Tennessee, but
you would assume so. I mean, he had to get Blaine Gabbert ready to play for them at the end of the season in that Indianapolis game,
right?
Week 17.
And you mentioned sort of rediscovering Derrick Henry. I mean, there is something to be said for not, you know, forcing square pegs into round holes and saying, okay, this doesn't work. These quarterbacks aren't healthy, or they're bad, or the receivers aren't good. So let's do this thing. There is something to be said for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We already talked about tackle being a priority this offseason. What else? I mean, I think, in my opinion, you know, they need a pass rusher. I think they got to find a tight end. I don't think Jimmy Graham's going to be the answer next year.
Yeah, I would. I think Lance Kendricks and Mercedes Lewis are, I guess, free to seek other options.
Yeah.
I think Robert Tonyan works in this offense a little better. But I, you know, is Danny Vitale that type of guy? Like he caught over 100 passes at Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
He's better served in that kind of role than
maybe
as a blocker. We saw lots of missed blocks on his end as like a true fullback.
We did.
So
yeah.
Tight end's interesting. I think the receivers, this offense probably fits Jamon Moore and Equanimeous St. Brown and MVS a little better.
Yeah.
I
actually think it fits Jamon Moore better than it does the other two. I think he won't have to run as much complicated stuff as he did, and I think it'll be more natural. He'll run his route and be open and then be able to do something with the ball.
Yeah, so I think, look, with 10 draft picks, tackle and I think guards – are the focus on offense to me. Because I think there's, with this change, there's a little more flexibility with the personnel you already have. Because look, if you know, you have Devontae Adams, that's a receiver most of these other teams we're talking about don't really have. We mentioned Julio Jones, but usually this offense is pretty democratic.
Mm-hmm.
It's throw to the open guy. It's not the matchup of, well, Devontae Adams wins all the time, so let's throw it to him 130 targets, you know?
Yeah, so you don't think he has 110 receptions next year?
No, I don't.
Right.
It might be more big plays. There might be, you know, more touchdowns. He catches a lot of touchdowns. So, yeah, I would say offensive line, and then I do think the defense, because this proliferation is only going to continue. Let, you know, whether it be, you know, versions of what New Orleans runs or versions of what Philadelphia is running. You know, Pettine's proved he can kind of scheme it. I think they need more bodies to play it.
Yeah. I do am interested to see if he's able to hire Nathaniel Hackett to be his offensive coordinator. He's interviewed him on Friday, and he did, despite getting fired in Jacksonville, he did some pretty good work from everything I've been able to tell with Blake Bortles, which is sort of like trying to make chicken soup out of...
I'll just let it go, Mark.
Yeah,
Murphy,
yeah,
dude.
Better. Yeah. So, you know, I would be interested to see him. Plus, he comes from a little different background. And so you add someone with a little more background, I don't think that's a bad thing, you know?
No, and it's not necessarily off the tree, if you will.
Right.
That, you know, it's real quick for people. You know, our older listeners might remember his father.
Paul Hackett.
Yeah, but...
interesting part is he was Mike McCarthy's mentor in Kansas City, Paul Hackett.
Yeah, so as we said, it's a West Coast-rooted system, but, you know, Nathaniel Hackett's been an offensive coordinator in Buffalo. You know, he's coordinated in college. So there's he brings some of those, again, those different ideas, those different sort of passing principles, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And also, again, a guy who, you know, quite frankly, like Matt LaFleur, trying to make offense out of situations that maybe the talent wasn't always that great.
Yeah. And then key to maybe all of his hires, since he already has Pettine in place, is a special teams coach.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got to find someone really good. I think, you know, it would be probably behoove them to have someone young with some, you know, innovative ideas, might as well. But, you know, that's up to him. I don't know about enough about special teams coaches to even know who's good or who's bad.
Right. Well, you know when it's bad.
Yeah, yeah. Right? You do know when it's bad, yes. Good point.
But I think what you want to find, look, if it's me and if you're Brian Gutekunst helping Matt LaFleur find these people, because let's face it, his experience is not very deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 8 years in the league and generally with just the same guys.
Right, right.
So I think what you'd want to do, this to me, you'd want to look at teams, A, that perform well, of course, but B, the issues that the Packers roster is going to have with a $30 million quarterback. And what does that mean? That means a lot of rookie contract guys, young guys who practice squad guys, like – look for similarly constructed back end of the roster, in my opinion, because you want someone who has experience dealing with that. It seemed like too often Ron Zook was, you know, you don't come out of the womb covering kicks, but, you know, honestly, when you have a $30 million quarterback, well, those guys have to.
That's who it's going to be. Yeah. I mean, it's been like that forever because Ted Thompson never signed any free agents, so you always had rookies playing special teams, and that was just a fact. And McCarthy had to deal with it, and McCarthy never found the right guy to run it all. So that'll be a key hire for LaFleur.
Definitely. So it's interesting. I mean, those are the two. And then the position coaches, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, there could be – you look around and really – you know, there's always seems to be a mix, some old school hardened, chiseled football guys, and then, you know, their sort of young, if you will, colleagues, peers that maybe can move on in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume, I'm not going to assume anything, but either he'll stick with James Campen or he'll find someone else. I think Joe Philbin will wind up somewhere else. I think David Rye, the wide receivers coach, will wind up somewhere else. So he'll have a few positions to fill. I've always liked Ben Sermons. I've liked his attitude and his, he just seems like like he knows what he's doing. I don't know behind the scenes whether that's true or not, but it sure seems like it.
And you reported Brian Angelico is remaining.
Yes, yes. LaFleur wants him to remain. He's under contract. I suppose if there were some job he was just totally enamored with, maybe they'd let him go. But he has some connections to that tree, and I think they like him a lot. And I think Gutekunst likes him a lot too. He's a pretty good coach. He's had a tough deal coaching first Martellus Bennett, and then, you know, having to coach Jimmy Graham to block
right.
is another thing. And I think he actually got a little bit out of Graham before he broke his thumb as a blocker.
So
all in all, we'll see what the staff turns out to be, and we'll have a good month to ruminate
right.
about it before the combine starts.
Yeah, it's I would say, generally speaking, it's been well received. I mean, I don't know what your emails and social media have been. I think I don't know, other than McDaniels, I don't know if any of the 10 they interviewed were crowd pleasers, if you will, but I do think that the youthful look, which is funny to say for a 39-year-old, but he does mm-hmm. look like a young guy, and obviously the offensive ideas that people believe he's going to have, I think has Packers fans excited about it.
Yeah, the impression I got from a lot of people I really trust in the business was, first it was, I can't believe that they're going with a guy with such little, coordinating experience. Are they trying to hire the next Sean McVay? This seems like a risky proposition. But who knows? Maybe he'll be the next Bill Walsh. You know, that's kind of the thing that I've gotten the most. So there's a lot of skepticism, but everybody also knows, you know, there's a Doug Peterson out there somewhere, and someone's going to find him. And, you know, maybe this is it. I don't know. So that's kind of the impression I got.
Yeah. No, it'll be – we'll know quick because
yep.
this is unlike, maybe Bruce Arians – with his age and his health and the quarterback, there's an expectation to win right away in Tampa. But they definitely don't have the Super Bowl expectations that this club does.
Mm-mm.
Regardless of the holes we know that are on this roster, regardless of the improvements we know they need to make, when you have Aaron Rodgers, the expectation is you are competing to go to the Super Bowl. And that's something Matt LaFleur is going to have to learn about and deal with. Because I think the honeymoon is over in week 13
right.
if they're 5-8.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. He's going to learn this is not Tennessee where, oh, boy, if they get have a winning season, that's great. No, this is expectations will be high right away.
Yeah.
So, well, I think we can just about wrap it up. We will try to, keep everybody up to date with the podcast. Stay in touch and make sure you follow Twitter and JS Online and Packers News. And we'll make sure that you know that a new podcast is up.
Yeah. Thanks for listening as always. And now we get to the shortened off season. They start work April 1st because of a new head coach.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff happening here. So.
We better get to Mexico fast,
right.
Get our vacation in. All right, Jim.
All right,
thanks
Tom.
To everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.